Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Hi, I'm Lauren Sherman, the host of Fashion People. I love fashion, obviously, but shopping for fashion online is kind of annoying. There's endless scrolling, my size is always out of stock, and I can't actually find what I want. No one has really made this work for me. That is until List. Instead of browsing different stores one by one, on List you can see and shop all of the best fashion. List is the secret shopping weapon now used by all my most stylish, cool, and in-the-know friends. Don't shop around. Join 200 million fashion shoppers, including me, on List.com. That's L-Y-S-T. Or download the List app on the App Store today.
If you can find the time to explore the mind of a stripper,
then you can find the time to spend with your actual family.
Prime Time with Isaac and Sue.
Damn! What they on? All steroids and no carbs? They're the thick-ass kids.
This is Prime Time.
We're not like you. We're grown-ups.
Your source for the best in local, regional, and national sports. Here are Isaac Ropp and Jason Sakanik with Primetime on 1080 The Fan.
All right, as we slide into July, perhaps we careen into July.
I like sliding into July's DMs, getting rejected harshly.
Hello, Mike. However you describe it, we are now in July. We are inching closer towards college football, and we do have a little bit of news on that front.
Well, there's a bunch of news
coming
today.
Up. Yeah. A lot of news.
Yeah, we had congressional meetings today.
All kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
But first, our poll question. Let's finally get to our poll question.
Time to get to the poll.
1080thefan.com, as always, that's our
Just
website.
Just give me the poll.
Give me the poll.
You know how to get there. It's on internet.
Yeah.
And it's always brought to you by AAA Heating and Cooling. Family business helping families for over 50 years. AAAIAQ.com. Today we're asking you, which is the worst sports contract? Okay.
Oh, okay. Well, it's Bobby Bonilla Day, so I'm assuming that this is it's going to rear its ugly head.
What an assumption by you.
Yep.
Boy, you put two and two together, pal.
Yeah, I've been hitting the head a lot.
Bobby Bonilla's $5.9 million deferred to 2035, which, by the way, he'll cash close to $30 million from that.
Yeah, that's
pretty
good.
Supposed to get $6 million. He's going to get $30 because he deferred it. Barry Zito, although it says Zeton on our poll question.
Really? Zeton. Barry Zeton?
Do you remember Barry Zeton?
I don't.
7 years, $126 million from the Giants. Jay Cutler, 7 years, $126 million from the Bears. Vernon Wells, 7 years, $126 million from the Blue Jays. By the way, yes, those are not a typo. Those are all the same deal.
Yeah.
Barry Zito, Jay Cutler, Vernon Wells. And then we also put on there for you, Nick Batum, 5 years, $120 million from the
really?
Hornets.
The worst deal of all time.
Dude, that deal's terrible.
Come on.
But it is on there. So vote 1080thefan.com. There is also honorable mention for Mike Hampton, 8 years,
is that the Rockies?
$121 million. And then there was one other one that was considered bad. And by the way, this doesn't say all time. This is which is the worst sports contract of this bunch. Now, the Bonilla contract, and the reason that is up there, yes, it is Bobby Bonilla Day.
Yeah.
And Bobby Bonilla Day is July 1 until 2035, where he cashes $1.19 million from the Mets every year on July 1.
Well, it's actually two, because then they give him a separate payment of like $500,000 to go along with it. He actually gets two payments.
Is that his interest then? Or
yeah, it's like an interest. He gets like an 8% interest tacked on it. So it actually ends up being more than that because he gets a $500,000 payment as well. And that continues. Yeah. So they basically took $5.9 million and they spread that out over, you know, however many 20 years or whatever. And it'll end up being $30 million when it's all said and done. Now, they didn't pay him. I think after they cut him, it was like 10 or 11 years before it kicked in. And now he just gets to collect a couple million bucks every single year.
Here's the story of Bobby Bonilla that you probably hear about every year at this time, but he, beginning in 2011, the Mets write a check to him every July 1, as you said, or two checks, whatever.
Yeah.
He signed a 5-year, $29 million deal way back in 1991, which at the time was the biggest contract in baseball history. And that deal, I mean, he was a huge deal then. Like, that was,
yeah.
His agent says when they signed that deal, they were downtown New York City, and he said Bobby Bonilla came out of the hotel or wherever they were, and he was just flooded with people who, I mean, he was a rock star.
Yeah, and Bobby Bonilla was really good. Like, I mean, there's, back in the day with Bonds and Bonilla, like, that guy was legit.
And by the way,
I think he kind of gets made into a joke, but Bobby,
oh, no, he was awesome.
Bobby Bonilla was a borderline great player.
I don't know why he would be considered a joke.
Well, I think it's just become this idea of, oh, you gave him all this money and he's not very good. And the end of the career wasn't real. You know, he kind of was a journeyman. But dude, during his prime, Bobby Bonilla was a killer.
Here's the thing. That's why this is an interesting question, is the Bobby Bonilla contract may not be, it may end up being obviously the worst contract in sports, but at the time it was not.
No.
And here's why. So the agent, by the way, who structured that deal, his name is Dennis Gilbert. He is still in Major League Baseball. He's an executive with the White Sox. And he says he doesn't take much credit for this. It was just the circumstances. So Bonilla signed with the Mets, but was traded 3.5 years later to Baltimore, and they deferred 2 years of his deal. So in 1999, 8 years after he signed that big fat contract, he went back to the Mets, but then he got released, and they still owed him the $5.9 million. That's where that number came from.
Yeah.
So in 1999, the Mets were good. Bonilla is cooked. He's too old. They get rid of him. They still owe him $5.9 million. Well, the Mets wanted to free up cash to make a title run, so they gave him deferred payments with 8% interest to start 2011.
Yeah, because the Mets were, I guess, were, I mean, they've always been a little bit of a cash-strapped franchise, and so this was one of their deals, is they thought they could make the money up on the back end.
Well, they thought they could make the money up because they were investing with Bernie Madoff.
Yeah.
And at the time, the Mets, the Madoff investment was to yield 10% a year. So if they get 10% a year from that money from Madoff, that offsets the 8% interest they will have to pay Bonilla.
Yep.
Plus, it frees up cash for them to go out and spend and try to make the World Series because they had a good team. So at the time, it was a win-win because the agent said Bonilla was super frugal, did not live above his means, and was really, it was really important for him to take care of his family for life.
Yeah.
And this was his opportunity to do it. He did not need the money right away. And he was like, well, 8%. At the time, I was reading about this today, they said 8% at the time was quite debatable. Some people were like, oh, Bonilla, dude. But now the federal rate is like 0.25%. Like, he is killing them
yep.
on that deal. So he will.
Oh, and by the way, the Mets lost. The Wilpons lost.
There's that.
Almost everything in the Bernie Madoff yeah, investment.
There's so, that. Right. There's so, that. So yeah, Bernie Madoff is serving 150 years in prison and the Mets have no money. So it ended up being a disaster.
Yeah.
And it's great for Bonilla. But when the deal expires, which is 2035, he will have cashed over $29 million from what was to be $5.9 million. But you could also make the case, you know, without Madoff, do the Mets make the 2000 World Series? The answer is no, because at the time they were cranking out money.
Yeah.
But without Madoff, do the Mets even go up for sale?
Look,
the answer is probably no.
In hindsight, you can just kill them for it. But again, to your point, and I've read this many times, at the time, it was not viewed as a horrific deal. It made sense for the Mets to do this.
And now, should they have known Madoff was a Ponzi scheme? Yeah, there's a lot of people that didn't know that.
Yeah, who knows, right? So, look, the Mets all look like jackasses because, well, they're the Mets. But, you know, I don't know if it's fair to kill them the way we do every year on Bobby Bonilla Day. There's plenty of bad contracts. Just off the top of my head, the ones that you fired off. But I remember Ryan Howard at the end of his deal. Right in Philadelphia, like Ryan Howard, they kept sending him down to the minors, and Ryan Howard was making 20 plus mil a year. Prince Fielder,
that was at the end of his deal.
Yeah, Prince Fielder had a really bad one.
I think the Vernon Wells one was really, really bad because, again, like everybody is like, there's always talk about like Albert Pujols' contract with the Angels, and like you said, the Ryan Howard deal ended up being bad. But if you get a year or two out of those guys, is that really the worst? I think the worst ones are the ones where they're coming off being great and instantly suck. And that was Vernon Wells.
Yeah.
Dude, they paid him like 30, it was 30 million a season or something.
Was it really that high?
Well, no. So hold on.
Mike,
time out.
Let me ask you this while you look that up, because I don't remember his name. And I
gotta
do
some math.
I want to look up his contract. You might know this being hockey, Mike. Who was the Islanders goaltender that they gave like a lifetime contract to?
Was it DiPietro?
There you go.
Or was it Luongo? Because I feel like they gave them both big contracts.
No, it was DiPietro. I got to look this up. So
I like how you called me Hockey Mike, which I feel like is totally not true, but I still got it right.
It was East Coast. I thought maybe, you know, you might remember that because it was the Islanders. Yeah, yeah. I got to look up his contract. Rick DiPietro was a goalie for the Islanders, and they gave him a lifetime deal worth like $70 or $80 million, and he played 1 or 2 years, and then they had to buy him out. And by the way, they bought him out for the entire contract. He got every single dime of that on a two-year lifetime deal. I gotta look this up.
So Vernon Wells made $18 million a year.
$18 million.
And he was coming off a great season and then stunk it up. And then Kevin Brown comes to mind, too. Somebody brought him up.
Kevin Brown.
He was 33 when the Dodgers gave him all that money. It's like $105 million.
Okay.
And he was terrible.
Here is Rick DiPietro of the Islanders. And this is the blurb on this. This is sportsbreak.com. They call it the granddaddy of all bad contracts, although they have it number two as the worst contract. They got A-Rod as the worst contract of all time.
Yeah, see, and I don't buy that.
With the Yankees.
It was high, but
they got a World Series out of it.
And he struggled with the Yankees some, but come on, that's not the worst. Come on, A-Rod?
Yeah, they've got it.
That's not the worst contract.
They list this. They put together a list of like the 30 worst contracts of all time. I'm trying to see. Carl Crawford's on here. They've got like Kimbo Slice. Nick Batum's on here, number 5. I was kind of balking at that. They got Jay Cutler at 4. Some dude for the New York Red Bulls who I've never heard of. Oh, so here's DiPietro's.
Hold on. The Nick Batum deal?
Yeah. They've got hit number 5.
Yeah, that was, they gave him $24 million a year, dude.
Well, I don't remember it being that much.
$24 million
a year. Yeah. $120 million is a lot of dough. Their summary, $120 million is a lot of dough for a guy who averages 11 points and 5 rebounds a game.
Exactly.
And to be on a mediocre team. All right, so this is the DiPietro. Granddaddy of all bad contracts, and one that would probably be in the curriculum if there was a course on how to be a bad sports GM. In the 2006-07 season, the Islanders somehow decided it would be a great idea to sign a goalie who had never recorded an NHL save percentage better than 915 to a whopping 15-year lifetime deal. The pack was to give DiPietro a whopping $67.5 million, easily the most unprecedented contract in the history of the NHL, possibly of all sports. He played 2 injury-riddled, inconsistent seasons over the next handful of years. And they ended up having to buy him out. They tried to, and he refused, so they paid him every dollar of that. They signed him to a 15-year lifetime contract. He played 2 seasons and was bad during those years and got $67.5 million.
Damn.
And that's what they're saying is that before he was even, by the way, that save percentage is not even good. He was an average goaltender, and they gave him a guaranteed $67.5 million. And then they say A-Rod as their worst contract of all time.
Yeah, and I don't buy that.
A-Rod did really well
for
most of the time. Playoffs is a different story, but he still won a World Series.
I don't know why they would put that number one.
He had good stats.
There were so many worse contracts than that.
Yeah, I don't understand that either. I'm kind of reading through their explanation. Even their explanation is still
Josh Hamilton's with the Angels?
Yeah, this just seems, I guess it's just
there's a lot of bad baseball
they're
ones.
Saying towards the end and the steroid thing and the fact that they had to pay him and the negative press and all this, but I'm with you. Yeah. I would not consider that contract to be anywhere near as bad as some of those others.
A couple other fun Bobby Bonilla facts. The only person to profit from Bernie Madoff, Bobby Bonilla. Darren Revelle had this. Now, Darren Revelle, every other tweet, you want to unfollow him, but
yeah.
Then he comes up with some gold. He says if you took the $5.9 million lump sum back when they paid, when they wanted, or when they owed Bobby Bonilla that in 2000, if he had taken that and dumped it all into Amazon stock and still had that stock today, he would have over $1 billion.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's, yeah. But I think you can probably say that about a lot of, you know.
Just puts it in perspective.
Yeah, if you could go back and invest that money.
Bobby Bonilla is still in the top 35% of highest paid players in baseball, even in 2020.
Yeah, I've seen that. Like, for a while there, he was, and I don't know what it is this year, but remember when the Mets were good and they played the Royals in the World Series, that was a really cheap team.
Bonilla made more than all those starters.
Yeah, it was
Syndergaard.
It was a really young, talented team, and Bonilla, I think, was the third highest paid guy on the Mets, and he made more than all the starting pitchers, except for Matt Harvey, who just signed a deal. Like, it's pretty embarrassing sometimes when you look at their payroll.
Yeah, good times.
And you know what? You never hear from Bonilla, right?
No.
I don't know what that guy's doing, but you never hear a peep from him. Nothing.
So on our poll question, which is the worst sports contract? Obviously, Bobby Bonilla leading at 38%. Right now, Barry Zito and Nick Batum, 25%. Jay Cutler, 8%. Vernon Wells, 4%. Vote 1080thefan.com. College football, could it be moving to spring? The latest on that next on The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Suk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, in the news coming up next, guys, gals. Everybody, the Penn State AD, whose name is Sandy Barber, or maybe it's Barbour,
B-A-R, in Portland.
Babar?
B-A-R-B-O-U-R.
Wasn't Babar like a elephant cartoon, I think?
Yes.
I thought I remember that, like growing up, like my kids, like, you want to watch Babar? No, I don't. But it was on at like 4 a.m. on HBO.
So, couple things from college football. Sandy came out and said, because a lot of people now are going, well, wait a minute, all these spikes in COVID, maybe the college football season would be best served to move to spring.
Yeah.
And the Penn State AD, Sandy Babar, said such a move would be a last resort.
It was a Dan Wolken had a column today on ESPN where he did a big anonymous, he talked to athletic directors, coaches, administrators from all over the country, but he said in order to get honesty, they all had to be anonymous. And he did say that there was a real decided, and go read it. It's a good piece on USA Today, or you can find him on Twitter. It talked about, even down in the Southeast Conference, that there is more and more skepticism that this is going to go off, and that he said there's been a real change here over the last 3 or 4 weeks, that for a while there, not only did it feel like college football was pushing through, but they were going to push through and they were going to have fans. But now that you're seeing some of these states that were so gung-ho, especially down in SEC country, that are having to take a back seat, it was just interesting to see some of the honest opinions of different people. And they said that the spring season is absolutely back in play, and that people are realizing that this may be the best option. And they're also saying too, that a lot of schools, you know, especially ones out west, are actually trying to talk to banks right now to get a line of credit going, because they suspect that even if the season goes off, there won't be fans, and that they're just not going to have the ability to do this. And there was another point. I mean, there were so many good little nuggets in here that were being brought up by different individuals. One of them, he said it was one of the SEC athletic directors, was talking about, what do you do against the smaller schools? He said, I in good conscience can't bring my guys out there and have them play against a school that can't test. So they were saying that you've got some of these smaller schools, you know, the lower division ones that the SEC plays even towards the end of the year and at the beginning, that need that payday just to make budget. And he said some of those schools are canceling seasons altogether. And he said, do you really think they're going to have the $75,000 or $100,000 needed to run constant testing on their team? So he goes, we can test our guys all we want, but I'm supposed to run my guys out there against a team that I know isn't testing? He goes, I can't do that in good conscience. So there's all these different little tentacles that are all tied together that, again, just goes to show you how difficult this task of getting college football off the ground is going to be. And the other one he said, too, is, again, from a financial standpoint, he said there's going to be schools fighting just to make their own budget, and all of a sudden you having to pay a team. So let's say, just off the top of our head, Oregon, right, is playing North Dakota State. And I know that's not a layup like some of these others, but I'm sure Oregon is paying North Dakota State $500,000, $750,000 to come here and play. All of a sudden, if you got Oregon that has no fans and they're facing a financial crunch here, does a school want to write a check for $500,000 or $700,000, or can they afford to write a check for $500,000 or $700,000? So there are just, and no one knows what this is going to look like, but One athletic director said that this next month of July is the most important month in modern college football history. Because if you don't have something definitive in place, well, when we get to the end of July, then there's nothing you can do. At that point, you either have to scrub it, boot it to spring, or at least delay the start of it and start canceling games. And then we get into the financials, and then you get into TV contracts and fans. And, you know, this is not like the NBA and these other sports leagues that can take the financial hit. These, a lot of these athletic programs, despite the record revenues, they just haven't been saving for a rainy day. And that's, you can see that they're talking to banks about a line of credit. I mean, you think about that right there. That should be a wake up call to how bad the financial shape is for some of these programs.
Good text. 503-250-1080. Spring ball over my dead student athletes' bodies. Yeah. Here's what Sandy Barber, the Penn State AD, said. Quote, one of the biggest challenges of a spring season, and it's probably the biggest one in my mind, is the proximity to next season and, frankly, a second loss spring ball. Overcomeable if perhaps we're willing to have a shortened season again in the category of something is better than nothing. That may not be a problem at all. There's no doubt there's been a little pessimism here in the last couple of weeks that we really hadn't had for probably about 4 to 6 weeks. I think that's part of the ebb and flow of the virus here. Obviously, my hope is that maybe as people start looking at the masking and social distancing again, and all of the precautions and recommitting to the seriousness of this, we'll see it flatten out. Well, so basically hope is
it's all you can do.
He's just hoping.
And that goes back to, we heard today from, you know, the leader of the country who said he was hoping that it just disappeared. And, you know, I don't know how good a strategy that is to hope that something disappears. One of the things they talked about in the article in USA Today was that some schools are talking about implementing a pod system to where, I swear to God, this is a real thing being discussed, where you're only allowed players on your team to associate with certain members of the team, and it would go in pods. So two quarterbacks couldn't hang out together. You would have basically have in pods away from football. You would have a running back, a receiver, and a quarterback, and an old lineman all hang out together. And then in another pod, there'd be another quarterback. So the idea is that if one group got sick, it wouldn't wipe out all the quarterbacks. It wouldn't wipe out all the running backs. That's how bad this is at this point, is you're coming up with these sorts of things. And you had an Arizona player today basically tweet out, because, you know, Arizona hit pause on any returning athletes. No more athletes are being brought back on campus for Arizona that aren't already there. Arizona has hit pause on their workouts because their state is in a, you know, in a huge spike. And so he tweeted out and said, hey, man, if the state is going backwards and we can't have kids on campus, why the hell am I here working out? And Javon Holland, by the way, one of the most talented players on the Oregon team, he retweeted and said, exactly. You're seeing more and more athletes that are starting to raise their hand and be like, yeah, I got a question here. What the hell are we doing? So I know that most players do want to play. I mean, we've heard that time and time again, but I do think you're seeing more and more of these athletes that are asking the question, hey, if it's not safe to go to a bar, if it's not safe to bring kids back on campus, if it's not safe for me to do all these things, why am I here playing football? And so this is, again, it goes back to what one coach said, or one AD, this is the most important month in modern college sports history.
Do you think that if they move to spring, somebody texted in and was like thinking about Penei Sewell, and do you think if they move to spring, elite players would play?
No.
They're moving on to the NFL if they're eligible.
I think a lot of them would bolt. Like I don't see how Trevor Lawrence or Penei Sewell, and it wouldn't be all of them. But if you're a first round prospect, I don't know why you do that. I mean, some may play for the love of the game, but I can't imagine that you would get everyone, Justin Fields and these types. No. You wouldn't put your college, your NFL career on the line knowing that you'd have to play in the spring, have a weird draft, wouldn't have the NFL evaluation process, and then you're going right into an NFL season? No, that's just kind of, I think that's a little bit silly to assume that those guys would be willing or wanting to do it. Also today on the NCAA note, they had the congressional hearings on name, image, and likeness, and one of the congressmen had the nerve to say that he didn't feel that the college athletes were emotionally ready to handle this sort of business dealing. Okay.
Yeah, yeah, I love that line.
Yeah.
As if anybody, okay, so most NBA guys aren't emotionally probably ready to handle that kind of money when they're 19.
Yeah.
Good problem to have. They'll figure it out, right? I mean, tennis, it comes with pitfalls, but it doesn't mean you shouldn't allow it.
Tennis players, golfers, all kinds of Olympic athletes.
Anyone who makes a lot of money young in their
college
life.
College students, you know, Justin Bieber when he was 14, you know, all these people. But because we think that, oh yeah, I don't know if they're mostly ready, therefore let's just put a cap on this. What a absolute horse bleep. What would you excuse for trying not to pay athletes?
And that's exactly what that is.
100%.
White blessings, Jason.
Yes.
White blessings.
The white blessings.
All right, in the news coming up next, here's Mike.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right, cruising right along. 4th of July coming up Friday. Me and Mike holding down the fort tomorrow. 4th of July is Saturday.
Yeah.
No show Friday.
There you go.
And then Mike and I will be out here doing some cool sports stuff for you tomorrow.
Sports.
It is July 1, 2020. It is time for In the News. I am your noted newsman. Today is International Chicken Wing Day.
Oh.
You don't seem excited.
Well, I was thinking, is like chicken wings... I love chicken wings, but not that I've traveled everywhere, but I haven't seen chicken wings really be a big deal anywhere else. Kind of seems like an American thing.
Maybe in the South?
What do you mean? Like South what?
In the South of the United States.
Well, I understand.
That is included in America.
I know. I'm just saying like that's where they're the biggest deal.
I think he meant other countries, Rob.
Yes.
I'm just saying, the South is popular. God.
I think you're trying to cover up for not understanding what he said.
I'm confused now and kind of
I thoroughly
frightened.
Understood what you said. I was just saying that in the South, they're very popular.
I understand that. But the fact that it's International Chicken Wing Day, I don't know if
they're big in Iceland,
I don't know if any of the other countries...
There, is that what you wanted?
...that I've ever been to, have I seen chicken wings be a deal. But chicken wings are delicious. And by the way, get the... I'm a bone-in guy, but it's a great debate between the bone-in and the boneless now, and it's divided us all, and I feel like we need to come together.
I just saw a list of the 50 best places for chicken wings in Europe.
Yeah.
I'm scrolling. Hold on.
You start at 50, and you have to scroll all the way down to 1.
Yeah, which I hate. At least we don't have to click through.
Oh, that's...
If we had to click through, I'd be out.
Exactly.
I think that style has mostly gone away.
Ooh.
Because does anyone click through? I'm like, go to hell.
No, they understand that you can't. Nobody will do that.
I'm not doing that.
Randy's Wing Bar in London.
Oh, okay.
Great wings. Number 2 is Julep's in Munich.
Again, been to 3 cities in Germany. Never once saw anyone eating chicken wings. Never, think I remember seeing one on a menu.
It is also International Joke Day.
We're going to get a dad joke out of you?
Yeah.
All right, what do we got?
What do you call your friends who love math?
What?
Algebros.
Ah!
Thank you.
Good laugh.
All right, where are we at here, Bill? Growing consensus on how you catch COVID. You want me to open that story?
I did see this story today. I read it.
Wall Street
Journal.
How to
catch it like in a net.
Like catching thunder
clouds. Now that's a dad joke.
Yeah, even though this will change a week from now. I did see that we've come to a kind of a consensus.
Yeah, just go to Tuscaloosa. That's how you catch it.
Yeah, we're 6 months into this, and we're still learning, but this is from the Wall Street Journal. They say there is a growing consensus about a central question. How do people become infected? It is not common to contract COVID from a contaminated surface, scientists now say, and fleeting encounters with people outdoors are unlikely to spread the coronavirus. Instead, the major culprit is close-up, person-to-person interactions for extended periods.
Yes, and they're saying, too, that the virus load, like the more you're around it, the more serious it can be, and that's like with medical professionals and whatnot. So again, that goes back to wash your hands, wear a mask, don't be in large groups of people. Indoors, not a good idea.
Crowded events, poorly ventilated areas, and places where people are talking loudly or singing, in one famous case, maximize the risk. I view that somewhat positively, I guess. You know, it's kind of like what we were talking about yesterday.
You're less likely to get it off a door handle or
Well, now
or
that we
like
understand
that.
How it spreads, we can avoid the main things of of how it spreads, right?
Yeah. But
that's better.
That goes back to, will we? Because we may view that as inconvenient, and apparently when things are inconvenient for us, we don't like to do
them. So when you see those stories about how, because there was one today where the groom died. It was like a wedding in India.
Yeah, a groom died and 80 people.
Of them got it.
Yeah.
Well, there you go.
Whoops.
Just based off of the criteria that they're talking about right there.
I was reading through another one a couple
days.
And
that wedding was indoors. They're saying all those people, close proximity. That's why
it's
you read about
for disaster.
People who are in close groups and everybody gets it. And then you read about people who are in close groups with their outdoors, or maybe they're masked up or they're socially distant. And then none of them get it. That's why.
I was reading a thing not too long ago, a couple days, where they were talking about just what a sinister little bastard this thing is. That the virus actually, when it's inside you, grows new tentacles to better attach itself to other cells around you and make sure that it grabs infection. So they're learning more and more about this. Each and every day they study it, but they're saying that the virus is growing and evolving and becoming more efficient. So, hey!
It has a brain.
Hooray!
So today is the day that the Oregon mask order in public indoor spaces goes into effect. This is statewide.
Yeah, Washington has this already. We've had this we've had it for about a week. I think
I must have missed that.
I want to say last Friday, maybe. I think you were you
I was gone,
gone.
Yeah.
Gone.
I missed that. I didn't know that. Okay.
Thursday or Friday it went into effect in Washington where
We're masking up.
You got to mask up and
both
then
both states.
And even outdoors, if you can't socially distance, you still have to wear a mask.
Right. Kate Brown says it is enforceable, and while she does not want to disseminate the popo on your ass, she does say that it will be enforceable by OSHA and
the
OLCC.
They want the businesses to step up. So the headline I read is, "Who's enforcing Oregon statewide mandatory mask rules?" And then the tagline was, "That depends."
Well, so she's saying it's up to the businesses, and if they don't comply, OSHA will be watching, the OLCC will be watching.
So basically,
they can be fined.
Yeah, they're putting pressure on the business. Where if you go into the business, you don't have one on, the business isn't going to serve you, because if they do, they're going to attack the business. So
yeah,
there you go. Basically,
even if you think it's probably fine and there's no one in there, or I'll be socially distant from the guy at the counter or whatever.
Yeah.
Put on your mask, because if somebody happens to be watching and you don't have it and they serve you, they could get fined.
Sure.
You like that business. You're doing business with that business.
Well, and you know, it's one of those things in light of everything that's going on, no governor wants the police responding to an irate person in a mask. And so they're just putting the onus on the businesses. And plus, it's giving us wonderful Karen Unhinged videos of people losing their ass, freaking out in grocery stores or trying to barge their way into Walmarts because they refuse to wear a mask.
Okay, I've got news on the kids coming up next.
Oh, okay.
You were asking yesterday that KinderCare in Laco.
Oh, yeah. We had a little outbreak.
Somebody
there
did some reporting on that.
Yeah, because they didn't say anything. They said there was an outbreak, but they didn't tell us who or what or why.
Well, why is COVID? Or what is COVID? Why is COVID? And who, I'll tell you next.
Okay.
445 on The Fan.
Prime Time with Isaac and Souk on 1080 The Fan.
All right. Coming up, got some college football stuff next hour. More college football stuff. Things to know about the start of the MLB season. We have some tech talk. We have some fun with audio. This show is loaded. So COVID cases among Oregon children under 10 grew fivefold in June.
Okay, I'm assuming that's not a good thing.
Well, depends on who you talk to.
Like, kids. There are some people that are like, get the youngs to get it. Herd immunity. Which, by the way, even Fauci said, not going to happen.
May 31, we only had 5 kids with it. Now we have 58 kids with it. Now we have 319 under the age of 10, all via community spread. So we've now learned that, and this is according to the Willamette Week, of that outbreak at KinderCare in Laco, which, by the way, is the only place in the nation, child care place in the nation that has had an outbreak.
Yikes.
Right here in Laco.
It's a little bit surprising.
Well, yeah, because, the kids just have been fighting it off.
Yeah.
But
either that or haven't been tested because they're asymptomatic.
Right. KinderCare in Laco, we know now at least 8 kids and 12 teachers got it.
Jeez.
So they have at least 20 cases there.
Again, that goes back to your, you know, what you just said. They're small groups indoors, or I mean large groups indoors, is just how rapidly it spreads.
So of the 319 kids 10 and under with COVID, 8 have needed a hospital bed. None have died.
Okay.
But that does not bode well for all this talk of schools reopening in a couple of months.
Yeah. And that's what, you know, Kate Brown came out and said that, you know, wear the mask. She said, or business may close, and did drop that schools may not reopen. So that is so weird. I mean, we still don't know. We're not that far off.
I know.
From school starting, and we have no idea. I mean, even my son, like, getting ready to go to college, we have no idea whether or not he's going to be on campus in the fall. No one does. Like, you're trying to push this thing back as far as possible, but eventually a decision has to be made.
Yeah, now they're saying 28 total cases at that daycare.
28.
Did you see our new case count in Oregon here today?
What do we got?
A new daily high, 281.
I know that's bad, but again, I'm going to choose to look at in regards to Florida with like 9,000 and say that we're doing okay. And again, it's right. I mean, it comes down to hospitalizations and I don't know if just case numbers are everything at this point. Although when you got 9,000 of them, that's kind of scary.
The minimum wage jumped today.
All right.
In Oregon.
In Oregon?
Yeah.
What is, I don't know what the minimum wage is. What are we?
I was going to ask you that. I didn't know this either, but Mike should know. Hey, Mike.
Wow.
I do not know.
That was a radio joke.
Yeah, it was.
For you guys out there in the audience. $7.25 is the federal minimum wage, which is unbelievable that that's still the minimum. That hasn't changed since 2009.
$7?
Yeah, $7.25. There's no way you could live on that. There's no way. So the minimum wage in Oregon has jumped to $12 an hour beginning today.
That's the same as the state of Washington.
Yeah. And then I think in Seattle,
Oregon was before this $11.25.
Boom. Seattle is $15. I think they went straight up to $15.
Some places have done that, supposedly the like livable wage. I'm looking here at different states. Idaho is $7.25.
So Idaho's on the Fed number?
Idaho's on the
Man.
Fed.
Man.
Florida is $8. Boy, some of these. Florida is $8.46. Utah is $7.25. That blows my mind.
That it's still that low?
Yeah, that it's still that low in some places. I'm trying to see who has the highest. $12 right now, from what I'm seeing, is the highest.
I think Seattle.
Well, but yeah, that's not a state.
Right.
That's just a city.
Yeah, I can't imagine it's more than 12 in a state.
I'm looking here, and there's a few that are at $12, and I haven't seen anything over that.
So they're saying up in Clark County, this could be one of the busiest fireworks sales seasons in recent memory.
Okay.
As people are lining up to blow up a piece of America.
I would say celebrate America by blowing up a small piece of it. Well, at least that's good. At least that's an industry that's doing well, right?
Yeah, I guess. Leach.
At this point, we'll take any industry doing okay.
Well, yeah, if you're in the fireworks business.
Yeah, times are good.
You were probably worried, right? You were like, oh, no.
Yeah. Well, but I know a lot of people, myself, right? Like, aren't you a little more conscious about what you're spending your money on right now? But apparently, when it comes to fireworks, people have been pent up and they want something.
This says, Bo Leach, who is the general manager at TNT Firework Warehouse up in Vancouver, says, we haven't seen this kind of excitement in 12 or 13 years.
So what you're saying is the best thing that could ever happen to the firework industry is a global pandemic.
Well, what, not necessarily him. I won't link this to Bo, but I think what some may feel is that this is going to be largely symbolic of our rats.
Yeah.
This is our rats.
Yahoo!
And they get out there and blow up things like, damn it, you may make me wear a mask. You may make me socially distance, but damn it, I'm blowing up a piece of my country.
I do think there are some smaller of the local ones. Someone said Sandy, I think, is still having their fireworks show. So I still think there may be pockets going on out there, but
yeah, but nobody can, like,
yeah, there's not large gatherings. Yeah. I think it's just more like, hey, if you can sit in your car and
watch them. And finally, Bill, many Oregon businesses want you to sign a waiver that you will not sue them if you catch COVID.
Yeah.
Now, I am of the opinion, just my personal opinion, that this is not unreasonable. I do not find this unreasonable. And the reason that is, I mean, it shouldn't have to be like this, but at the same time, all it takes is one cuckoo to come into your business and get it. And you got to spend a bunch of money on lawyers.
Yeah.
You know? So I understand why a business would do this. And it, even though a lot of people aren't going to like it, but, and I don't think you're going to get many businesses doing it, but there are a growing number of companies in Oregon and across the nation that are requiring this. For example, the Bay Club in Tigard. I don't even know what that is.
I don't know either. My guess is it's some sort of club on a bay.
It's a summer camp thing, I guess. They have to have parents and because they send their kids to summer camp there or whatever, they have to have parents acknowledge that they could suffer a big financial blow if they're exposed to coronavirus. Crooked River Ranch Golf Course.
Well, I know that, but some of this is...
The circuit bouldering gyms?
Yeah, this is a weird sort of thing because I've seen plenty of stuff where workers are pissed off because they're like, I'm basically being forced back to work. They're saying, hey, we're going to open up. You either come back to work or go pound sand, and they don't feel ready to go back to work. But it's twofold. I definitely see the business side, but I understand that there's a lot of workers that are feeling threatened right now that they're being brought back under unsafe conditions.
Dosha Salon Spa has 6 locations in Portland, and they're telling patrons that they do have all the safety measures in place, but they cannot guarantee they won't get COVID, and so they have to sign a waiver.
Well, and that, I think they're asking like student athletes to do that, and some even student athletes are balking at that. And by the way, people are in the Sandy Fireworks Show, I guess, has already been canceled. As of a couple days ago, I think they were trying to do it, but so it's been postponed.
Till when? I mean, you can't wait.
It's been postponed to next year. It's been canceled, but no one wants to say canceled.
And as you were mentioning the college sports programs, University of Oregon, Oregon State, and Portland State have said that they have not presented liability waivers to students, athletes, staff, or the public. The Ducks, however, have asked athletes attending voluntary workouts to sign a form indicating that they've been educated about safety precautions to lessen the spread of the disease. But the form makes no mention of waiving legal rights.
Yeah, because they were talking about that today. There were some congressional hearings on name, image, and likeness and the COVID response or whatever. And one of the ladies who was testifying, I read through her testimony, was really good. She's a sports law professor. She said that those waivers that they're trying to get the kids to sign, that's not worth the paper that they're printed on. And she kind of went after the NCAA and was kind of like, how dare you? And, you know, that sort of thing. So... there's that. And people saying the Bay Club used to be the club sport. Remember by the Blazers practice facility?
Oh, that's called the Bay Club?
I guess that's the Bay Club now.
Huh.
Yeah, we all know
we're not
that.
In the Bay.
Yeah, there's a... I don't know why that's the
Where's
Bay.
Where's the Bay?
I don't know. Bay of what? But yeah, I guess that's the old club sport Oregon.
I do remember that. That place was cool.
Uh-huh. Yeah, for a while it was the place. Like, you could go and, like Jerome Kersey and stuff, with like where you could see him play pickup.
Pickup games.
Yeah, it was a big deal
out
there.
They had a bar in there. Don't ask me why I remember that. I
haven't been in there in a long, long... I haven't been out to the Blazer practice facility in forever.
What, you don't cover the team? Why don't you get back to what you're supposed to be doing? That's breaking news.
When's the last time you went out to the practice facility?
Oh, probably for that Neil O'Shea meeting.
Double secret probation?
All right. That's it. We're done. Yeah. July 1.
Okay.
In the news is over. Coming up next, we've got the Hot 5 at 5. And as always, this time of year, well, that doesn't make any sense. It's not this time of year. Normally, it's a very slow time of year in the sports world. But right now, during COVID, there is just news aplenty.
Yes, there is.
Every day, something's a-changing. And hey, it does, we do have some Blazers news to tell you about today. So if you haven't heard that, stick around. We'll get to the Hot 5 at 5 next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.